and welcome to The Watcher's Diaries, a weekly podcast all about Buffy. I'm Mary.
And I'm Froggy.
And this week we're talking about Season 5, Episode 14, Crush. I have no announcements.
No. Okay. No.
The only thing is that we're recording this on St. Patrick's Day, so yeah. Sláinte. But other than that, let's move on, because there is a lot to talk about in this episode.
Yeah, there's a lot that they crammed a lot.
So Crush, it aired February 13th, 2001. Our synopsis is, Dawn tells her big sister that she suspects Spike is in love with Buffy. Too creeped out to be comfortable around him, Buffy confronts the defanged vamp about his secret crush. Meanwhile, a train with several murdered passengers aboard arrives in Sunnydale, along with Drusilla. This is another one of those episodes that I was like, I thought Drusilla was physically in this episode a lot more than she was.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too when I was watching it. Like, I was expecting to find out that it was Drusilla from the very start.
Right.
Like, you forget that they really are hiding it.
Mm-hmm.
Even though over in Angel Land.
Yeah. And I do love that we're going to talk about, like, Drew is going to reference what has been going on in Los Angeles.
Yeah. Yeah.
But first, what are our foreign titles?
So this week we have some good ones. French, we have the Declaration. German, The Lovely Love. Hungarian, Crowd. I mean, you got a crowd of his ex-girlfriends. Portuguese, Passions. Russian, Amorousness.
It's fine.
And Spanish from both Latin America and Spain, Spike in Love.
I like Spike in Love.
I do too. I kind of liked Passions just because it is a very soap opera.
It is.
Moment that happens in this. So I feel like maybe that's what they were referencing, or I could be reading too much into it, but I do like Spike in Love.
So we have a previously on, reminding us that Spike loves Buffy, Dawn is the key, Dawn knows she's the key, and no one can remember that Ben is Glory and vice versa. Then we're off to the grand reopening of the Bronze, now sporting a shiny new logo. Everyone will remember that the Bronze was kind of torn apart by Anya's ex, the troll. Anya, Xander, Willow, and Tara are all on the dance floor while Buffy sits alone, watching. That is until Spike appears. Bloody shame. Huh? Them jacking up the prices at the bar to pay for the new roof. Not their fault their insurance doesn't cover acts of troll. You know what? Sunnydale insurance agents. This is another web series that we need.
Yeah, yeah.
But I need Mr. Froggy in like his deadpan voice being a claims adjuster in Sunnydale.
Yeah, yeah. He could definitely do the claims adjuster. And even like with his deadpan and like, oh, so you had this happen. Yeah, it would be it's a good role for Mr. Froggy.
Buffy tells him he could always go find somewhere else to patronize. You know what? He just might. Seeing as how they remodeled his onion flour right off the menu. It was really the only thing this place had going for it.
I like how mad he is that they took the bloomin' onion off the menu.
I'd be mad too.
See, I'm not a fan. I'm not a fan of the bloomin' onion, so it's fair. Not as much for me.
What's he doing? What does she mean? What's he doing there at her table talking to her like they're some kind of talking buddies? Well, he saw her sitting alone. Thought she might want some type of company. Buffy looks at him like he's grown three heads, and so he gets up. Fine. Have it her way. Only he's not done, because he turns right back around a second later. They took on that Glory chippy together. He was right there with her, fighting the good fight. Actually, he was more sleeping the good sleep of the unconscious. Still, points for intent. You would think that would be enough to earn him a little sliver of consideration, of respect. Xander and Anya return just then, and Xander says that Spike is in his seat. He gets up to leave, looking a bit huffy, and Anya says Xander may have hurt his feelings. And one should never hurt the feelings of a brutal killer. He says it sarcastically at first and then realizes that, wait, That might actually be good advice. Anyway, who's up for another round of refreshments? On him, as he got paid that day. Willow could use a water, but water does not pose a challenge for Payday Man. He, looking down, Xander realizes his change is gone. Buffy looks towards the bar and Spike, who is buying himself another drink. That diabolical fiend. Xander goes to, I don't know, scold him?
I do love this scene with Xander because it is a reminder that he has got himself a good job.
Yeah, he is adulting very well.
Yes, and like I love the whole thing about him wanting to treat his friends because he has the money and yeah. We are here to have a good, like, I enjoy this moment and his excitement to take care of his friends, because so often, like earlier seasons, they took care of him. You know, he was broke and he came from being poor, and now he's got money and he wants to help his friends out.
Yeah, Xander's a good friend.
Yes, but no. Apparently he's the worst.
While Buffy turns her attention to Willow, she's still getting the headaches. They come and go, but yeah, mostly they're still exercising their visitation rights. Tara gives her a gentle but also concerned look. No more teleportation spells. You know, just in case the first 600 times she told her didn't take. She knows, but they have nothing when it comes to fighting Glory. And if they don't come up with something, nosebleeds and headaches are going to be the least of her problems. Buffy says this is the first night of R&R she's had in weeks. So how about they just not say the name Glory for one night? Tara's down with that. They'll just call She Who Shall Not Be Named by another name. I think Buffy doesn't want to talk about Glory at all, but oh, okay. This is a good plan. She tries to think of a name, like Ben. Yeah, okay, that will work. Buffy isn't offering suggestion. She's commenting on the fact that she spied him across the room. And so she excuses herself and makes her way over. Taking a seat beside him, she said she almost didn't recognize him due to the lack of scrubs. Well, his wardrobe would surprise her. Entire closets full of outfits, not blue pajamas. She then tells him that Dawn told her about the hospital and what happened before she got there. For a moment, Ben looks really worried, but then Buffy thanks him for looking out for her. Oh, yeah, he's just glad Dawn's okay. We move from them to Xander and Spike, Xander telling Spike that he works hard for his money. So hard for it, honey. Okay, that song like literally popped in my head the moment he said that line.
Oh, yeah.
And he didn't. He stole it. Which Xander is making into very hard work. Xander tries to be intimidating, reminding Spike that he doesn't have a chip in his head, and so he can do much more damage to Spike than Spike could do to him. Spike's not really listening, though. Instead, he's watching Buffy, who's talking to Ben. Yeah? Still distracted, he answers Xander, like he could ever hurt him. We leave the Bronze then, going to the Sunnydale train station, where a train is just arriving. Exciting! I wonder who's going to be on it.
This is a nice, comfortable train.
The station agent readies himself as the train comes to a stop, but nobody gets off. Huh. He calls out, reminding anyone inside that this is the last stop on this line. When still, nobody gets off. He heads inside to find the entire fleet of passengers slaughtered. Sensing someone or something behind him, he screams and tries to flee. But whoever, or whatever, it is, pulls him back inside. Poor station agent. Credits. Still awesome.
So, I have a question about this scene.
Okay.
Or comment about this scene.
Okay.
So, okay, we know who's on the train, because we already discussed it.
We know who's on the train.
But was she driving the train, or did she kill the conductor later after the train was done being driven?
So all we know is that the passengers were killed.
Yeah.
And like, I assume they were only, because I think the newspaper article says it was 6 passengers.
Yeah.
And I would assume because this is the end of the line, those were the last 6 passengers on the train. Because we don't even see anybody disembark from like cars down
the
way. But she may have left the crew. Like, yeah. She may have just slaughtered that car. Like, the station agent isn't going to be really concerned about the crew at this moment. Mm-hmm. He's trying to get all the passengers off. Yeah,
it's just funny that, because usually when a train stops, you have other crew that gets off, you know, right before. So it was just funny to imagine the fact that, just imagine Drusilla.
Yeah, because in like 2001, I don't think we really had the technology where the train would have been fine on its own for a while.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just again, it's a nitpicky thing, but it's just funny to imagine Drusilla behind the controls.
I mean, it's Drusilla. She probably did.
Yeah. Or she could have, you know, entranced the conductor.
That's true. Like, because we're going to talk about Drusilla's powers in a little bit. Because I have some questions about, like, the end of this episode.
Yeah.
We return from the credits to the Summers house, where Dawn, Joyce, and Giles are all hanging in the living room. As Buffy returns home, Giles asks if she had a good time. You know, she did. Aside from Willow's headaches and Spike's cameo appearance, Spike was there? Dawn seems intrigued by that bit of knowledge. He was. Joyce is just glad Buffy's home, as she was not really feeling all that safe. Until she remembered that Rupert was there, and so instantly felt better. I love Giles's wounded look.
Oh, yeah.
And Joyce's attempt to make a save.
Mm-hmm.
It's a cute little family moment.
It is. It is. She's like, oh, but yes, he's here. But even he acknowledges that.
Yeah. Like, Joyce does. Giles thanks her for the bank backpedal. But yeah, like you said, he does acknowledge that he is not a slayer. Mm-hmm. And is a poor substitute for such. He gets up to leave and Buffy walks him to the door. How is Dawn? Good. She's coping remarkably well, all things considered. Great, because Buffy wanted to ask him something. They've been going easy on Dawn this past week or so, letting things slide. Giles doesn't think that's wise. He thinks any special treatment will undermine Dawn's sense of normality. Really? Oh, yes. Okay. Dawn! Buffy yells as she turns to face the living room. What? What did she say about borrowing her clothes? She didn't touch her clothes. Oh, really? Then what happened to her blue cashmere sweater? Turns out Spike stole it. Is he sitting in his crypt, holding it, running his fingers over it? Okay, honest question here.
Mm-hmm.
I know we've called Spike out on being a little bit of a creeper with the clothes stealing, sweater sniffing. Mm-hmm. And, like, the undies were definitely crossing a line.
Oh, that was, yeah, yeah.
But his having her sweater, is that really any different than when girls manage to borrow their crush's hoodies and then never return them? Like marveling at how they smell, like their aftershave or whatever.
I think they're, because Spike is an extra layer of creepy.
Okay.
I think it is just a little, like, it depends on, okay, so what is the girl doing? Like, is she being a creeper? Then yes, it is definitely the same. But Spike, I love him.
All I could think in this, all I could think about in this scene was, like, the girls who have the hoodies, and they're like, oh, it smells like him.
Yeah.
Oh, and I'm like, is that the parallel we're drawing here? That this is just teenage crush behavior,
yeah,
but twisted because vampire.
It's just a little extra creepy because it's Spike.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it's just a little extra layer. The fact that he has the shrine to her.
Yeah, okay, go with me here. So again, teenage crush behavior, but twisted. So in high school, oh my God, Georgie, if you listen to this, I apologize a lot right now.
You're airing the dirty laundry.
So Georgie lived in like an awesome house. She lived back in downtown Silver Spring, and these houses were like Victorian. So her closet, there was stairs that went over part of her bedroom. So her closet, if you parted her clothes, you'd get like a sloped back and almost like a shelf. A shrine to Fox Mulder. See, lived he's in the back of that closet.
See, that's different. I'm going to say that's different because he is not a real person. If it was a shrine to David Duchovny himself and like creeper behavior with that, might be a little, but for a fictional.
Okay.
She doesn't know David Duchovny and Fox Mulder. So no. That is a different thing.
But I had
pictures of, but this is a person that Spike actually knows and has contact with, you know. So it is a little like she wasn't stalking David Duchovny.
Okay, because I was gonna be like, Swifties.
If you don't
Swiftie behavior,
you don't actually know the person.
No, but they feel like they do.
Look,
K-pop fans.
That's a whole other level of obsession that we are.
Spike is just in this fandom obsession phase.
Yeah, but he's not
married to Buffy on the astral plane.
And that at least, yeah.
Okay, no, it is creepier when it's someone you know.
It is creepier with someone you know. I mean, all of us as teenage girls had some sort of like posters on our wall and little things for different celebrities and whatnot.
The boy band. Yeah, we all had the MKOTB posters.
If we would have snuck into their house and stole their clothes,
that is one thing that did not fly in the Wild West of the 90s.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about how the 90s was a wild time, but even then, sneaking into a celebrity crush's home to grab their unmentionables was not.
Harmony enters asking if he's going to come to bed. He's not tired. Well, neither is she. Maybe he could come and tire her out. He's not in the mood tonight. Harmony huffs. He's never in the mood, but maybe they could try something different tonight. What? Like they're not yammering all the time? Like a game. And so we have Harmony in Buffy's sweater pretending to be the Slayer, which seems very effective in getting Spike to jump her bones. Also, Harmony pretending to be the Slayer is the cutest thing I have ever seen.
Yeah, it's so cute. It's so cheesy. Like there's because she's not. Harmony is not a good actress and not good at pretending anything. So it is a very cute, still a little creepy.
Oh, creepy, very cute. The next day, we're at UC Sunnydale, where Buffy, Willow, and Tara are walking and talking, apparently about the Hunchback of Notre Dame. Willow doesn't understand why Quasimodo couldn't just end up with Esmeralda. They could have the wedding right there, under the very bells that he toiled with and labored with tirelessly for years. Tara says it couldn't have ended that way because all of Quasimodo's actions were selfishly motivated. That all he did because he was in love with a woman who would never love him back. Besides, you know it's not going to have a happy ending when the guy is all bumpy. Okay, let's talk about this.
Okay.
Because clearly this is meant to be a parallel with Spike, right? Like, that is why this line was written.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But funny enough, though, it is and it isn't. Mm-hmm. Because when we get to intervention, what he does because he is in love with Buffy. He does because he cares for Dawn. But he does it with no expectations of a return of affection.
Yep.
And that's why Buffy actually, that's their first actual kiss in intervention. Because Buffy sees that he did this with no expectation of anything in return.
Yep.
So you can do something for the love of someone you know isn't going to love you back simply because you care about them. It is not all selfish motivation.
Yep.
But this also, while they are trying to make the director parallel to Spike, because that is what this episode is about, this is also a parallel to any vampire, and especially Angel.
Mm-hmm.
He was all bumpy. There's no happy ending for them. And he did kind of sit on his ass and eat rats while crying over his past sins until Whistler showed him Buffy. Mm-hmm. So all he did for a girl as well.
Yep.
So, like, I know what they were going for, but they did a little bit more than
they probably intended.
Willow asks Buffy what she thinks. The test isn't until tomorrow, right? She'll have an opinion then. But she read it, right? Not really. She did rent the movie, though. Tara asks if it was the one with Charles Laughton. Okay, I want to talk about this for a second. Because a whole bunch of stuff about this version of the movie is fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
So this version of the film is the 1939 version, and it stars Maureen O'Hara as Esmeralda.
Yep.
This was one of the first films ever shown at the first Cannes Film Festival before World War II shut the festival down. which World War II was actually vital to this version of the film, or at least the atmosphere that was leading up to World War II was. Because, yes, there was a whole bunch of tomfoolery going on with the studios. Universal had obviously made their version in the 20s as part of the Universal Monster series. Mm-hmm. There were talks of a remake. MGM wanted to do the remake. They tried to get the rights. Universal kind of pulled the ultimate, like, fuck you move and sold the rights to RKO, which is how we got this film. RKO apparently built an entire medieval city on a ranch outside of Encino, but that is the least interesting part of this film's history. So we all know the huge part of the plot of Hunchback is the persecution of the Romani. Well, at the time this was being made, the Romani were once again being persecuted mm-hmm. alongside the Jewish people of Europe. And the filmmakers were very cognizant of that and very much wanted to show the whole, hey, look, this is happening again. And they wanted people to watch this scene and like this movie and draw those correlations. They were very, yep. very in tune with that.
And for the time period, for them to be cognizant, and because let's face it, the 30s and the 40s were a very fucked up yeah. time for even in, you know, in America as well. So like for them to be like, take a look at what is happening in this movie. Take a look at what is happening in Europe.
Yeah.
And to draw that line was very, it was very odd for the time.
Yeah. Lawton was also, he was a British actor. And so there is a story from set that shortly after Britain had declared war on Germany and had entered the fight, Lawton was to film a scene where Quasimodo rings the bells for Esmeralda. And he was in so much anguish over what was happening in his homeland that he just rang the bells over and over and threw himself into that until he literally collapsed from exhaustion. There's also a whole bunch of changes from the novel, including making Frollo a good guy because having a villainous priest might have gone against some laws at the time.
Yeah.
Like it is just truly fascinating stuff. Like, yeah, I suggest everyone look it up.
Yeah, it was all it was all the Hays Code and like
yes, Hays Code. That's what it was.
Yeah, yeah. Like, but I do like Buffy's joke about watching the animated one and
yes,
which oh like for having a Disney movie, Frollo was the most horrifying villain.
I love all the like jokes that are like, I would have loved to be in the pitch meeting for that one. Like, okay, we're gonna do the story with like genocide, sexual lust. Like, and who was like
talking yes, gargoyles?
The children will love this
because we have talking gargoyles.
Because we have talking gargoyles.
You know, like, and us being at the age that we are at. Like when it came out, like we enjoyed it because.
But yeah, so it came out in 1996.
Yeah.
Hold on. I have a question. I wonder. Hmm. So this is going to be a very odd correlation, but go with me.
Okay.
So The Hunchback of Notre Dame came out in 1996. Gargoyles ran from 94 to 97.
Mm-hmm.
Was the reason they made Hunchback of Notre Dame like, hey, we have this show that everybody loves that's about talking gargoyles. Let's make a movie where we can have talking gargoyles.
I think you're giving them too much credit.
Okay. I was just wondering.
I think you're giving them too much credit.
Fair enough. All right. But yes, back to Buffy and them. She does. Yeah. Like you said, she does ask if he was one of the singing gargoyles.
Yes.
And Willow is just like, oh boy. They pass by a boy reading a paper and Buffy snatches it out of his hands, looking over the headline. It's of course about the train full of dead passengers. Does she think it was Glory? Considering the article mentions neck trauma and blood loss, she's more thinking vampire. And not just any vampire, but more on that later. Back in Spike's crypt, he emerges from the underground part to find Dawn. What's she doing there looking about? She's not lurking. Is that how he gets about during the day? Does that lead down to the sewers? Can she see? No. Why is she? Does Buffy know she's there? Spike lights up a cigarette as Dawn looks around. Right. Because nothing would make Buffy happier than to know she's hanging around after school in the vampire's lair. Specifically his. Go home then. She doesn't feel like it right now. Well, she bloody well can't stay there. Why not? Because he has things to do. Bad, evil things that are not for a child's eyes. Dawn is not at all buying this. And she was amused until he brought up the whole child thing. She's not a child. She's not even human. At least not originally. Yeah, well, originally he was. He got over it. Doesn't seem to matter how one starts out. That's smart. She gets that. And she likes how Spike talks to her, like she can understand things. Everyone else is being all twitchy and secretive. They're just trying to keep her safe. She feels safe with him. This causes Spike to choke on his cigarette. And he demands that she take that back.
Once again, I love Spike with the other Summers girls. Like,
yes.
You know, and we'll see in a little bit. But yeah, I love, and like, I like to imagine again, like the two of them in the memories, you know, Spike,
yeah.
Because they are so comfortable around each other, the way that he's comfortable with Joyce.
What she means is he has the whole superpower thing and he's tough as Buffy is, maybe even tougher. Buffy thinks so too. Dawn, stop manipulating Spike. Yeah. It's not nice. She does. Dawn says she's always worried about what she's going to do if Spike gets that chip out of his head. Is that right? So what else does Buffy say about him? Arriving home, Buffy calls out to find only her mother there. Joyce says Dawn never came home from school that day. And she saw the article about those people. And Buffy assures her that what happened on the train has nothing to do with Glory and nothing to do with Dawn. Dawn probably just, she'll go find her. Yeah, okay, so it had nothing to do with Glory. But it is a reminder that there are, like, several other things in Sunnydale
that could
kill Dawn. Like, I don't think we should be like, oh, it's not Glory. It's fine. We don't know where she is.
Oh, yeah. It's okay. It's okay. There's nothing else that we have to worry about.
And so we're back in the crypt and having story hour. Spike telling Dawn all about some of his past misdeeds. I kept waiting for this scene to come up. I love this scene so much. The dramatic lighting, the one lantern between them, like the ghost story feel of it. Currently, Spike is telling Dawn about a family he slaughtered. He does check to make sure it isn't too much for her, and she tells him to keep going. He says he killed them all, but there was still someone missing, a little girl. So he got real quiet, and then all of a sudden, he heard a small noise coming from the coal bin. Tiniest little sigh. So he listens some more, and then the door bursts open as Buffy storms in. Spike! Dawn's right there. Dawn says Spike was telling her a story, and he was just getting to the good part. What is she doing there? Hanging out? Hanging out there! Can Buffy just let Spike finish the story? Then she can do the lecture. Okay, sure. Let's hear the story Spike is telling her little sister. Right. Yeah. So he knew the girl was in the coal bin. So he rips it open, very violent, and hauls her out of there. And then he gives her to a nice family and a good home who is never, ever mean to her and doesn't lock her in a coal bin. What? Dawn frowns. That was so lame. Spike tells Buffy that he really was just about to send her home. He knew Buffy would be frightened. Buffy just tells Dawn to get her stuff. They're going home. Outside, though, she has much more to say. Like how the whole crypt plus vampire equals bad thing doesn't seem to register with Dawn. But it was Spike. Hanging out with Spike is not cool. It's dangerous and icky. Yeah, well, Dawn doesn't think Spike's icky. Well, then think again, sister. Buffy turns to look at Dawn. She has a crush on him. No, she doesn't. He's just has cool hair and wears cool leather coats and stuff. And he doesn't treat her like an alien. Buffy just says that she cannot have a crush on something that is dead and evil and a vampire. Really? So then why was Buffy with Angel for 3 years? One, good job, Dawn.
Oh, yes. Way to go, Dawn.
You call out that hypocrisy. Two, your sister and Angel weren't even together for 3 years.
Yeah, yeah.
But I guess if we're talking simply crush and like Buffy's making goo-goo eyes at Angel, then yeah, it was about 3 years.
Yeah, and we're not gonna discuss the fact that they had so little on-screen time together.
Buffy says Angel had a soul. And Spike has a chip. Same difference. This is a really interesting comparison, and it's going to become an even more interesting comparison in season 7.
Mm-hmm.
Because both Angel and Spike received those against their will. Angel didn't want a soul. Spike didn't want a chip. And both of those forced them into doing good. Angel, because he supposedly wanted to atone, but also because Whistler showed him this 15-year-old, and he was like, okay, yeah, maybe I can be a good person, and she'll tell me I'm a good person, and then everyone will believe it, including me. Spike, because the only violence he could do was to demons, and so he might as well help out the Slayer, have fun, make some cash, and show her that he can be a good man, soul or no soul. So it is interesting that Dawn draws the parallel between those, because then next, or season 7, we see Spike go get a soul, which he does intentionally.
Mm-hmm.
He decides. Because he wants to be good.
Yeah.
Like, that is a decision he makes for himself. But Angel with a soul and Spike with a chip are both in a place that they did not choose for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Just something to think about. Buffy cannot listen to this right now. Spike is a monster, and she's only 14. Buffy, you were 15 when you met a vampire older than Spike, so let's calm it down a bit.
Yes.
Whatever. Dawn says it doesn't matter. Even if she did have a crush, Spike wouldn't notice, not with Buffy around. What does that mean? Spike's totally into her. As Buffy just stares at Dawn, she continues, Spike is totally in love with her. Huh? The next day, Buffy takes Xander along with her to look at the train car, see if they can find definitive proof that this was vampires and how many there were. As they're looking, Buffy turns like she's going to ask Xander something and then stops. Never mind. She starts again. Dawn said that... No, forget it. Buffy. Xander's looking a little concerned. So Dawn thinks she said that Spike's in love with her. Immediately, Xander starts laughing. She's not joking. Oh, he hopes not. It's funnier if it's true. She's serious. Xander, this is serious.
This is such a cute moment between friends.
It is. It really is. Xander tries to compose himself as Buffy flops into a seat with a body outline on it. It's creepy. No, Xander tells her it's not creepy, because how upset can she really get over one of Spike's fever daydreams that is never going to come true? Oh, Xander. Oh, Xander. If only you could see ahead into the next season.
Mm-hmm.
His daydreams are very much going to come true. They're going to break a house. She guesses. So how did Dawn... Where did she come to this extremely entertaining conclusion? Buffy says she was hanging out with him. She thinks Dawn might have a crush on him. What? Now Xander is finding this a little less funny, as he's been replaced. Poor Xander. Buffy says she knew Spike always had a weird fixation with her, but he's the one Dawn has a crush on. Him! Deciding there's nothing there, Buffy says they should go. Xander's still stuck on Dawn, not thinking he's cool anymore. Poor Xander.
He's like, oh, she has a crush on me. And like, oh, because it's always, you know, big, you know, Xander's the older guy. But now she has a crush on an even older guy.
That is true. It is an even older guy.
It's a very teenage girl thing to do, though.
It is. It very much is. But also poor everyone, because since none of them looked above the seats, neither of them saw the porcelain doll stored there. A ribbon over her eyes. It's Miss Edith. And where there's Miss Edith, there's Drusilla.
Mm-hmm.
Yay!
We got our crazy girl back.
Once again, arriving home, Buffy hears her mom in the kitchen talking to someone. Two someones, actually. Her sister and Spike. Joyce is telling them some story about the gallery, and the three of them are just cracking up. What's this? Joyce said Spike came by to apologize about yesterday, the missing child drama, and he just decided to stay? Well, she got talking about the gallery, and Spike says not to get them all laughing again. Besides, he needs to talk to her eldest. Stepping into the hall, he tells Buffy that he has some intel she might be interested in. Sorry, she's all out of cash. Maybe he should go hit on Giles. Giles. I don't know. I think he should go hit on Giles.
I would like to see that happen.
He says he's got a lead on the guy who killed those people, the ones on the train, and he can tell her where. Better, he can show her. Buffy hesitates and Spike frowns. What's the matter? Nothing. Just Spike sighs. It's two vamps who are holed up in a warehouse downtown. Now, come on, grab a coat and her pointy sticks. They go, staking out the place. It's quiet, and Buffy is looking hella awkward. Spike begins to lean over her. She protests, but turns out he really only wants the flask he has stashed in the glove box. He offers it to her, which, ew, but he tells her it's not blood, it's bourbon. Again, Buffy says, ew, which, hush your mouth! Bourbon is amazing.
Although, to be fair, at 20-something years old, I was not into bourbon and whiskey and such. So I'll give her that one.
Okay. Fair enough. Spike just tells her to suit herself and replaces the flask before drumming on the dashboard and singing, I want to be sedated by the Ramones. Hell yes. He then asks Buffy if she likes the Ramones. Even if she doesn't, I bet Giles does. Joyce, too. Go bond with your future in-laws over the music, yeah. William. Buffy answers his question with a question of her own. If he isn't doing this for the money, then why is he... Shh. Spike directs her attention back to the street where the two vamps are entering the warehouse. Looks like it's time for them to make their move. These vamps are just... they're sad. And I agree with Spike that they're kind of an embarrassment. Hey. But also, they're kind of smart.
They're just...
because they don't want to engage with the Slayer.
Yeah, they're just trying to do their own thing.
Yeah, like make popcorn and flip through CDs.
Yeah, they're just hanging out and chilling.
And when Buffy and Spike enter, they flee. Should they chase after them? Taken in the warehouse, Buffy says they've been there a while. They've nested. So they had nothing to do with last night's murders. Whoever did this just arrived last night. And he's wasted her time again. She goes to storm out. He follows and he opens the door for her. Another William move.
Mm-hmm.
Buffy is a little weirded out and he tells her he wasn't thinking. He just acted. She wants to know what this is. And he shuts the door. He tells her not to get her knickers twisted, but she just asks again. What is this? The late night stakeouts, the bogus suspects, the flask. Okay, hold on. Hold on. Late night, because vampires.
The vampires, yes.
We don't know he knew the suspects were bogus. He just heard there were two vampires holed up in a warehouse.
Mm-hmm.
And he could have honestly thought he was helping. And even if they weren't the vampires that killed these people, they're still vampires. You're still a Slayer. Kill them.
Yeah.
And Flask, hello, you have met Spike before tonight, right?
Yes.
Like, none of this was odd, baby doll.
I'm going to give it to Buffy. I'm going to be on her side. She just found out that Spike has a crush on her. So she's feeling a little...
Right, but she's overreading normal things.
But when you're...
He's not being weird here.
Yes. She's gonna overread into it.
Fair. And I think, like, her headspace, that makes a lot of sense. But we have to acknowledge she is overreading. Oh, yeah.
She is overreading.
Still, Buffy wants to know, is this a date? A date? Spike kind of pshaws at that. Please. Date. She is completely off her bird, unless... does she want it to be?
He's thinking, no, it's not a date, but wait, can it be a date?
Buffy's now realizing everything Dodd said is true, and she is, like we just said, she's having a moment. Because, ew, Spike, is he out of his mind? He says it's not so unusual to people in the workplace. Feelings develop. No, feelings do not develop. No feelings. She can't deny it. There's something between them. Loathing. Disgust. Heat. Desire. Buffy is just like, Spike, please, you're a vampire. Angel was a vampire. Angel was good.
Was he?
Yeah. He can be good. He's changed. What? That chip in his head? That's not change. That's holding him back. He's like a serial killer in prison. Women marry them all the time.
Couldn't the soul be the same thing?
Yeah. Yeah, I think there's some things here Buffy doesn't want to see.
Yes, but also, you know.
Spike's not wrong. No. Women marry serial killers all the time.
Yes. And they're not as nice as Spike.
But he's not like that. Something's happening to him. He can't stop thinking about her. And if that means turning his back on the whole evil thing... Buffy says he doesn't know what he means, that he doesn't know what feelings are. He damn well does. He lies awake every night. He sleeps during the day. Yeah, but she's missing the point. This is real. Don't.
Okay, Buffy. I used to have to sleep during the day because I worked at night.
Right? Like, it's a form of expression, Buffy. Let it go. Buffy cuts him off. Don't say it. She's leaving. But they need to talk. They don't need to do anything. There is no them. And then she leaves him standing there. But it's okay, because when he returns home, he has a surprise waiting.
Please.
Drusilla, who tells him she's come to make everything right again. Okay, but I do want to take like 1 second and talk about the conversation in the warehouse for a few reasons. One, I think it's another conversation we need to like tuck away and remember for the end of season 6. And 2, we know that vampires can have deep feelings.
Yeah.
Deep emotions, and they can have them even without a soul. And we're going to talk a whole hell of a lot about that in just a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, and we also talked a lot about Spike.
Yeah.
Because his relationship with Drusilla, he didn't have a chip or a soul, and he still had deep feelings.
Yeah. Drusilla catches everyone up on what's been going on in LA and on Angel. Darla got Mojo'd back from the dead. Drusilla turned her into a vampire, and now they're working on turning Angel. See, Drusilla wants Spike to come back to LA with her, wants them to be a family again, even if she is cross with Angel for setting her on fire. Spike says he's done the whole LA scene. Didn't suit him. Besides, got a great setup in Sunnydale. Sweet digs, all the townies he can eat. Drew chastises him. Naughty. He needn't make up lies. She knows why he won't come. Poor boy. Tin soldiers put tiny little knickknacks in his brain. Can't hunt. Can't hunt. Can't kill. He's got a chip. Right. So she's heard. Poor Spike's become a cautionary tale for vampires. Better be good, kiddies. Or else they'll wire you up someday. Spike's a bit riled up. Kicks some things. But Drew says she doesn't believe in science. All those bits and molecules that no one has ever seen. She trusts eyes and hearts alone. And does he know what hers is singing out right now? That he's a killer, born to slash and bash and bleed out like poetry. No little tinker toy could ever stop him. Spike wants to agree, but the pain. She doesn't understand. It's searing. It's blinding. She says it's all in his head, but she can see it. Nasty bits of plastic, spider webbing out blue shocks. Everyone is a lie. Electricity lies. It tells him he's not a bad dog, but he is. She kind of growl, purrs at Spike, and he seems into it until Harmony arrives.
Yeah.
What is this? He turns to face her and she sees Drusilla and, oh, she gets it. Their little game wasn't enough for him. So now he's going out and found some cheap queen of the damned to pretend to be his precious Druidzilla. Harm, he better not be thinking what she thinks he's thinking. Because her answer is the same as always. No threesome unless it's boy, boy, girl, or Charlize Theron. Which, fair, because...
I mean, yeah, yeah.
Who wouldn't want to do a threesome with Charlize Theron?
I know, seriously.
Spike informs her that this is Drusilla. And Harmony goes off. She has some nerves showing up there after all this time, after breaking her sweet boo-boo's heart. Boo-boo.
I love how she just leans over and mouths that.
It's so good. Harmony just keeps going, though. Does she have any idea how hard it was to break down the walls he put up after she left? Serious trust issues. So it's no use coming crawling back to him. Because Spikey don't play that game anymore, Morticia. I like that Drew just gives her the little, like, talk to the hand emotion as Spike grabs Harmony. Drusilla just really is a queen and we love her.
Mm-hmm.
Spike tells Harmony that it was fun while it lasted. But he thinks right now it would be better if she hit the road. And then he throws her into a wall. Harmony is devastated. Why? Because she's back? No, because he is. He goes to Drew, an arm encircling her waist. There he is, her darling, deadly boy. At the Summers house, Buffy is telling Joyce and Willow about Spike's confession. And he actually said it, actually used those words. Yep. Did Buffy lead him on in any way? Even unintentionally? Joyce is a wee bit concerned. Well, she did beat him up a lot. And for Spike, that is third base. Oh, Joyce doesn't like this. He could become dangerous. Buffy tells her, not really. Not so long as he has the chip in his head. Willow's not sure. Because these things, they can become pretty twisted. And Spike, he is pretty twisted. Yeah, Buffy gets it. But she made it clear, right? That it could never, ever happen between them? Of course. Or rather, she thinks she did. She was kind of taken by surprise. Then she has to talk to him again. No, no, no. She needs to avoid him, like the plague. Willow disagrees. She needs to shut it down completely. If he thinks there's still a chance, who knows what he will do. So I'm going to call this scene PTSD from the whole Angelus incident.
Yeah.
Because Joyce has no reason to think that Spike will turn violent here. She's been to his crypt. Dawn has been to his crypt. He's stopped by the house. He's cried on her shoulder. She does not see Spike as a threat.
Yeah, I think it is a little bit of that. Plus my daughter with another vampire.
Yeah. So, which again ties into the whole, like, they're having flashbacks to Buffy and Angel. And when Buffy and Angel went bad and Angel broke into all their houses and killed their fish. And
Yeah, like you may not have any reason to think that this person is going to be any different, but yeah, you're going to be a little cautious.
A little wary.
Yeah. Like it's one thing to have Spike in their home as a friend.
Yeah.
But it's another for Joyce to think about another vampire with her daughter.
Yeah. Speaking of what Spike will do, we're back in the Bronze. Spike and Drew waltz in looking fabulous. Stealing drinks as they make their way to the dance floor. The chemistry between James and Juliet is, as always, astounding.
Yeah, I mean, and considering that we haven't seen them together in this capacity for so long, the fact that they just are able to get right back into it.
Yeah, I mean, the way they move together perfectly in sync. I mean, I'd believe they'd been a couple for nearly a century.
Mm-hmm.
As they dance, Drew spots a couple making out up on the catwalk. The game is on. Grabbing Buffy's coat, Joyce tells Buffy that she's doing the right thing. That it's better to nip this whole thing in the bud before the bud nips her. Willow says if she wants her to go along, she can back her up with some scowling. No, this is something she needs to do on her own. But there is something else she can do. Now, up on the catwalk themselves, Spike and Drew approach the couple. She tears the two apart, shoving the girl towards Spike before taking the boy for herself. Though Drew dives right in, Spike hesitates. Whether he's unsure about whether he truly wants to do this or not, or unsure about the pain, we don't know. However, as Drusilla raises her gaze a bit to look at him, he goes for it, puts on his girl face, and sinks in his fangs, seemingly without pain. So here's where I have questions. Is he just pushing through the pain because of Drusilla? Or has she, like, mojoed him to, like, ignore the pain synapses?
That's what I thought. Because he, like, I feel like if he was pushing through it,
you'd still see something on his face. You'd
still see some pain. But I think she worked her mojo.
When she was
like
telling him it was like all in his head, she was mojoing him.
Yeah, yeah. I think she was.
It's the only explanation that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because he goes right back to having pain after she leaves.
Yeah, yeah. So it was her using her little ability. Bit of, yeah, yeah.
Okay. That's what I thought. I just wanted some confirmation on that.
I really think if he was pushing through and forcing himself, you would see pain on his face. You would see him struggling to feed.
Buffy heads to Spike's crypt, but there's seemingly no one there. No Spike, no Drew, not even Harmony. After calling out a few times, she heads down into the underground part, which just seems like a bad idea. Again, there's no one there, but she does find the dummy and Spike's pictures of her drawings, which does he draw too? Did he find some that, like, Angelus had stashed somewhere? I'm very curious. Like, I'm very, very curious.
Is he a poet and an artist?
I mean, that would fly for the Victorian era, I feel.
Yeah. Yeah.
Buffy's a bit wigged out, which, fair.
Fair.
and heads back topside, only to find Spike. See anything interesting? He has blood on his face. What happened? From behind Buffy, Drusilla answers, "Me," right before tasering her with a cattle prod. She remembers his ex, right? Came back, she did. Decided she couldn't live without him. Drew says he's been feeding again, that she knows what her boy really wants to eat. Tasing Buffy again, she asks if they should tie her up, play with her a bit. No, Spike's done playing games. Ooh. Drusilla likes when he's all dour and serious. Good, because then he tases her. With all the games. When Buffy comes to, she's back in the underground lair. Spike has her chained up. Buffy is confused as Spike stands before her, saying he thought she was going to sleep all night. Drusilla? Spike steps aside to reveal her tied to a pole. Unhappy about it. It's not nice for Spike to change the game mid-play. He's taken a chair and the music hasn't stopped. She thinks she's going to be very cross with him when the game stops. Sorry, pet. His house, his rules. Buffy wants to know what's going on, and Spike says he is going to prove something to her. He loves her. Ew. Buffy is just, eh. But he says, no, look at him. He loves her. She is all he thinks about, dreams about. She's in his gut. He's drowning in her. At this, Drew starts laughing. She knew it. Knew he loved the Slayer. Knew it before he even did. Pixies in her head whispered to her. Spike says Buffy can't deny there's something between them. Yeah, revulsion. And whatever Spike thinks he's feeling, it's not love. You can't love without a soul. I call bullshit on this, and so does Rue. She says they can, actually. They can love quite well, if not wisely. I think Drusilla's description here is kind of spot on.
Mm-hmm.
And Spike will echo this sentiment later on after he gets his soul. In the comics, he tells Buffy that he does notice a difference in the way he feels for her with a soul and the way he felt with her for her without one. And he does think that what he felt for her without a soul was a selfish bastardization of love. And I think this is kind of like what we've been saying all along, especially since Spike and Drew were first introduced, that vampires like Spike and Drew, they can love, but at its core, it's twisted because they are all vampires. You know, Spike, and I know we talked about this a ton in Full for Love, in life, he was this all-in hopeless romantic. He becomes obsessive in his unlife because of that, like, perversion and that twist. Mm-hmm. You know, he worshipped Drusilla. He's consumed by Buffy. His love eats away at him.
Mm-hmm.
Also, side note, Drusilla's line is actually from Othello. It is switched up a bit. The line, which is said by the man himself in the play, is, "I am one who loved not wisely, but too well."
Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit of Shakespeare in there with Spike and Drew. She still doesn't believe it. Still doesn't think he means it. She wants proof. Well, then how's this? He goes, grabbing a stake and puts it right at Drusilla's chest. He's going to stake her for her. Buffy says that doesn't prove anything, except that he's a sad, miserable vampire that she should have dusted ages ago. He tells her not to mock it. This is Drusilla. Does she have any idea what she means to him? She's the face of his salvation, delivered him from mediocrity. For over a century, they cut a swath through continents. She never stopped surprising him, taking him to new depths. He was a lucky bloke, just to touch such a black beauty. Drew is touched by Spike's words, and it's clear he means every single one. So Buffy should know how serious this is. He puts the stake back against Drew's chest. She has to know what that means. Not really. Kill her. Why should Buffy care? Because if she doesn't tell him there's something between them, then he is going to untie Drew and let her kill Buffy instead. Yes, please. Drew likes that game much more. Spike just needs a little something. A crumb. A smidgen. Just let him know that there's a chance. That maybe, someday. He steps close to her and she says his name, softly, seductively, before telling him the only chance he had with her was when she was unconscious. Again, let us tuck this in our wallets for the end of next season.
put a pin on that.
Spike is beyond frustrated. He throws the steak, letting out a bit of a yell. What is wrong with these bloody women? What the hell does it take? Why do they torment him so? Buffy wants to know what question he would like answered first. But he just continues. He's at the end of his tether. He doesn't even know why he bothers. It's all Drew's fault. Is it? Yes, because if she hadn't left him for that sodding chaos demon, then he wouldn't have come back to Sunnydale and wouldn't have a chip in his head. And then Buffy wouldn't be able to touch him because that, with her, it's wrong. He knows it. He's not a complete idiot. Does she think Spike likes having her all up inside him, destroying all that he was until he's nothing more than a shell? She says she hates it, but she won't leave. What he really should do is get rid of both of them. Burn them, cut them into pieces, and there won't be anything left to cock up things for. He falls to the ground with an arrow in his back, thanks to Harmony, who is kind of pissed.
Poor Spike. About he is not having a good time.
He is not. But you know what? I'm kind of on Harmony's side for a half second. Because he's going on and on about these two other women.
Mm-hmm.
And she just... She is the actual girlfriend of the moment.
Mm-hmm. But he never treated her right.
No, I'm glad Harmony found her female empowerment.
Yeah. Harmony deserves so much better.
She does. She gave him the best bunch of months of her life. She clocks him with a crossbow and Drusilla cheers her on. That's right. Teach the naughty boy a lesson. Great. Now they're all teaming up. Harmony says she thought she could change him. Thought maybe if she gave and gave and gave that he'd come around, be a little nicer. That he'd stop treating her like his dog. But now she sees it's him. He's the dog that needs to be put. Getting up off the floor, Spike tackles Harmony and attempts to get the crossbow from her. Their fight gives both Buffy and Drusilla a chance to try and get free. Drusilla manages it first, goes straight for Buffy. Well, Harmony says Spike is on her hair again. She twists the arrow in his back to get him off, and Buffy uses her legs to defend herself as much as she can from Drusilla. She sends Drusilla flying at one point, but then the vampire is back with a large piece of wood that she's kind of like clubbing at Buffy. The moment Harmony is down, Spike's getting Drew off of Buffy and unlocking her. Realizing that Spike really has chosen Buffy over her, Drusilla says he is so lost, even she can't help him now. And Harmony, she wants Spike to say goodbye to all this. Because he is not going to see it anymore, unless, you know, he runs into her somewhere else. But then it's just going to be her walking away from him. But even then, she's probably just going to back away. Because all this she was talking about, her ass. Which does actually look particularly delightful in the jeans he's wearing.
Oh yeah, she looks good.
As Harmony leaves, Buffy punches Spike, sending him straight into his little shrine. Still, he runs to catch up with her. They need to talk. She can't just walk away from this. What part of punching him in the face did he not understand? She wants him out of this town, out of this planet. He doesn't come near her, her friends, or her family ever again. Spike says what they have, it's not pretty, but it's real. And she can't just shut him out. Actually, she can, because what she had Willow do while she was gone, revoke his invitation. And the look on his face, the actual hurt when she shuts the door on him. I feel really bad for him.
Yeah.
And again, we're going to store all this away for the end of next season because all of this, all these conversations they've basically had between Fool for Love and now, this is all going to go into what happens in that scene. And I'm not excusing what happens in that scene, but I think we need to understand the history of their interactions.
Yep.
To properly talk about it. But also, Buffy does send mixed signals. I mean, she tells Spike at the beginning of the episode, why are you sitting here talking to me like we're friends?
Mm-hmm.
And then the moment Dawn is missing, she goes to him wanting his help.
Yeah.
So it is a very confusing interactions that they have.
Yeah.
But like I said, that's why we're going to store everything away, because I think to be able to properly talk about what happens at the end of next season, like adults, we have to talk about the history of all their interactions.
Yeah.
But that is it for this week. That was a roller coaster of a ride.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, my favorite part is when they're all in the crypt and just Spike is just done with everything.
He says he's ready to swear off women.
Oh, yeah. He is ready.
He needs to go date Xander.
Like, yeah.
Just be done. Be done with girls.
Yeah, he needs to get himself a boyfriend for a while.
Yes, this poor man. But thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us next time when we take on season 5, episode 16, I Was Made to Love You. Are we going to try to rope in Mr. Frog for evil robot makers?
Yes, yes. He is up for
good
evil robots. Yes, he is here. I think there was another episode where he's like, oh, man, I should have come in.
Yes.
I should have come in for that. But I'm like, no, we have you.
We need to tap him with Warren. And then that way he'll be prepared when we like tap him into a couple of the trio episodes next season.
Yeah, we're definitely going to get him. We're definitely going to get him in with some trio.
Until then, you can check out our various social media channels, all of which will be listed in the show notes. And if you like the show and you want to let us know it, you can subscribe, rate, and review wherever you listen to your podcasts, or write to us directly at thewatchersdiaries@gmail.com. Bye!
Bye!